hit it.
And welcome to Alzheimer's Speaks Radio. I'm your host, Lori LeBay, and I'm so excited that you're joining us today. We are going to have a fascinating conversation, as usual, as we learn from people all around the world at all ages and stages of life. Stay tuned as we shift our dementia care from crisis to comfort.
All right, here we go. What you think about?
Well, hi, everyone, and welcome to Alzheimer's Speaks Radio. I'm your host, Lori LeBay, and I'm thrilled you're joining us today. We are going to have a great conversation about empowerment and how to accommodate and support someone that you are caring for. But before I introduce our guest, I always like to welcome our new listeners because we hear from people all around the world all the time. And so for those of you that aren't familiar with us, Alzheimer's Speaks Radio basically was started because my own mom lived with dementia for 30 years. And I really wanted to connect people to services, products, and tools all around the world, give them hope and inspire them in new ways to care. Because I know it can be a long, hard road when you're feeling isolated or disconnected. So our show is about an hour long. We are not about sound bites. We are about sound information and conversation. So maybe you can be our next guest. Everyone is welcome, from those diagnosed, family and friends that are caring for a loved one, to a whole array of business professionals and artists and performers. So we've had authors, movie directors, singers, songwriters, activists, advocates, researchers, you name it. And you know, I think stories are really powerful, and I think that's how we change our mindsets is actually by touching people's hearts through real, authentic stories. Now, I also want to mention that Alzheimer's Speaks has a main website, just alzheimerspeaks.com, and there you can find a ton of information. In fact, we have one full section dedicated to free resources, so you can find tools, you can get connected to the radio show, to dementia chats, where you'll hear specifically from those living with dementia and what their wants and needs are, as well as Dementia in the Arts, where they highlight their work. If you're interested in, becoming part of the Purple Angel movement or a dementia-friendly group or memory cafes, we can help you out with that and so much more. So just go to alzheimerspeaks.com for that information. We also provide programs and services and help people with their marketing and so forth, et cetera. And I am very excited. Betty the Bald Chicken is a key note story that I have told for years and years, and people have asked me to put it in book form. We are in the process of just doing the final editing of that. And so Betty the Bald Chicken, Lessons in How to Care, which is a children's book, is available to pre-order right now through our site, or you can wait until it is live. But very, very excited to get that off into the public's hands. And it's not just dementia specific. It deals really with any diversity. So whenever you don't feel like you fit in, if it's bullying, if it's divorce, if it's a death, the list goes on and on. We've all been there. We know it doesn't feel good, and we know there's better ways to care. I'd also like to give a shout out to the Footbar Walker and to the Adaptive Equipment and Caregiving Corner. So let's go ahead and introduce our guest today. I have the privilege of talking with Emerson Lee, and she uses the pronouns they and them. And so they are an end-of-life doula, a elder support person. They have been certified as a dementia practitioner. And they are the founders of Happy Memories Elder Support. which we're going to go into detail. And their practice supports current and future elders in order to live fully in terms of their life and disabilities, if it's dementia or not. So, Emerson, you are also a neurodivergent person, so I want you to talk a little bit about that. You are very creative, and you're a lover of dogs, flowers, and cake. So welcome to the show today. I am thrilled to have you and to be able to hear your story today.
Hi, Lori and everyone. Thank you so much for having me today. It's such an honor to be a tiny part of what is this whole global network of, as you mentioned, all these resources. You're right. I'm neurodivergent, which is a new discovery for me. And it's interesting because one of the first questions people ask, I'm sure you've experienced too, is how did you get into dementia care? And it's been interesting lately to realize that I got into dementia care because my brain is different. And so I feel comfortable around other people with different brains. And I always felt a sense of kinship and solidarity with people living with dementia. Felt like I was spending time with friends more than caring for someone. So that's been a really cool thing to explore. As a neurodivergent person, I'm autistic and have ADHD. And I am still exploring all of the overlaps of kinship and, you know, how we can understand each other better through having different kinds of brains.
Wonderful. Well, thanks for sharing that. Sometimes that's difficult for people to talk about when it touches them personally. A lot of times it's easy to talk about everybody else's issues and stuff.
Yeah.
and yet I think, you know, this is so common. And, you know, we're all a little bit different and we're wired differently. And that's how we can better understand to work together and develop friendships and bonds and be supportive is having a better understanding. So thank you for that. I wanted to ask you, because I ask all my guests this, if they have been personally touched by dementia in their own family or circle of friends. So have you had any relatives or friends that have been diagnosed with dementia?
That's such a good question, because I had gotten to know my uncle who was living with it, which is part of why I got into dementia care. But I never had like a really significant person in my life who really substantially, you know, altered my experience of dementia. So that's one of the reasons why it now makes sense to me that my autism is part of why I'm in this work, because I always felt like I should have, you know, like a person or someone. And now I'm like, oh, maybe it was me in some ways. But I did get to know my uncle. We did spend time together that I didn't expect to be so lively and fun. He had always been a health nut, and we found ourselves eating burgers and playing silly games, things like that. And so he wasn't kind of the huge driving force it is for some people, like your mom and your 30 years together. But he was certainly one of my first friends with dementia.
Okay, wonderful. Well, thanks for sharing that. I think it's rare when I talk to somebody who hasn't been touched, but sometimes that is the case. And then most that I'm interviewing, of course, have clients or contacts that might not be in their immediate, you know, personal circle there. But it's very rare when someone hasn't been touched these days. Let's talk a little bit more about your path into this work. When did you start it? What really initiated it for you? And, you know, was there like that, a lot of times there's like one moment that just kind of pushes you kind of over the edge or forward going, no, you can't ignore this anymore. This is what you're supposed to do.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, because it really is like this long winding journey with all these little steps and then kind of a big leap. And for me, you know, some of those steps were time with my uncle, volunteering with a woman living with dementia. I took a class on aging that completely changed my entire life. And those were just small steps. And then when I moved to a new state, I moved down to Arizona, and I was applying for jobs and just randomly applied to be a receptionist at a care community. And it was just kind of something that was available. I did have interest in it, but I wasn't completely oriented towards getting into this yet. It was in the back of my mind, but it wasn't intentional. And then I go to the interview and I rave about art and music and animal therapy and having conversations. And they called me afterwards and they were like, we don't think you'd be best for our receptionist position. We actually want you to be our life enrichment coordinator. So I feel like I was drafted into my dream job. And that was like the big leap where I was like, oh, I'm doing this every day now. And from that point forward, it has been like I've hit the ground running, haven't stopped since then.
Well, how nice that they, you know, that they could see that, and how wonderful that they had an opening for that as well at the same time.
Kind it was, and it really was. And I had, it had taken a bit to find a job down there. I thought I would find something in academic advising, which I had some experience in at the time. And it really was such a like window of timing that was so serendipitous and has completely altered my life. And I've told the woman who offered me the position repeatedly, I'm like, you completely changed my life by offering that.
Wow. It is interesting how things just can take a turn, and we have no idea that they're coming. But then when they're offered, they just, it just makes sense. And we should all say thank you to her, you know, for helping you get into this space. Now, you often use verbs like empower, accommodate, support. Why are those words so important to you, and why should they be important to other people?
Yeah, those are three of my favorite words. I talk about them an obnoxious amount. and I call it the EASE Amendment, which stands for Empower, Accommodate, and Support Everyone. And I think of it as it's an amendment to this kind of traditional model of just care and control. A lot of care has been, you know, just control, give basic care and manage behaviors has been a lot of it. And that's shifting significantly. And I think empower, accommodate, and support summarizes a lot of what we're shifting towards. And it comes from my background in disability justice, that for all people living with disabilities, we're all humans who have many capabilities, and we don't always need to be cared for. We need to be empowered. And even someone who can no longer walk and talk can still be empowered, can still be given choices and be recognized as a full person who makes sense, who has needs, and has strengths and a lot to bring to the world. So those three words I circle around a lot in my work, because I feel really strongly that those are the forces I want to bring more of to the world, both for people living with dementia, for myself as an autistic person, for anyone who is a human in the world.
Mm-hmm. Now, disability justice, I have to say I have not heard that term before, and I'm kind of embarrassed because before I was in this, which I've been in the dementia arena since 2008, and then I was in residential real estate for 25, but then for 10 years I worked with developmentally disabled. And is that a formal national group or local chapter or just a term? Because I think others might be interested in that too.
Yeah, I appreciate you bringing attention to it, because there's so much more I could say about it. And part of it is, I'm still learning about it. It's a term that describes a movement, and it's kind of a grassroots movement led by a lot of people living with people of color and people living with disabilities, LGBTQ people. There are many powerful names in the movement. It's really collaborative, but it's in a lot of ways we have the disability rights movement, and that's very powerful and important. Disability justice is kind of an extension of that, of intersectionality and really recognizing disability, not just as something to, give rights to, but also to recognize as part of human diversity and something that can be a strength for people. Causes challenges, but it's really a movement, and it's something I'm really excited to start learning more and more about, and I'm glad you brought it up, because I do think it's something powerful to learn about.
Wonderful. Well, thank you. I think that, like I said, I think the more inclusive we can be, the better off we all are. And the only way to do that is to gather knowledge and, not be shut in, but being proud of whoever you are with whatever you have, because we all have something that's a little bit different from somebody else. And so I think that that's a really important thing. Well, why don't we talk a little bit about your company itself in terms of what it has to offer people? So Happy Memories Elder Support, you know, what does that really mean? And maybe we should start out with why you picked the name. I always find that interesting. And then what do you offer?
Yeah. I love you bringing attention to the name. I love it so much. When I was leaving memory care, I never consciously thought about calling it Happy Memories. I just knew. Like, I was like, it's Happy Memories. That's where I'm going. But the elder support took me a long time because I didn't want people to hear elder care and think that I was an in-home care agency or just doing caregiving. I wanted that emphasis on support, that I'm there as a companion and there to support psychosocial emotional needs. And so Happy Memories Elder Support was finally what I landed on to express that. It's still a work in progress. People still think, you know, oh, well, obviously you're just a caregiver, which there's no just a caregiver. But it is, it's evolved over time to, at this point, I see myself as a dementia specialized end-of-life doula. And I am specifically working with people to prepare to live fully. So I even work with people, which we can talk more about, there's a lot there, but I work with people who don't even have dementia yet, and maybe they never will, but they're scared about it, or they have family history and they feel like it's really likely, as well as people in early stages who are looking ahead further down the journey, and they're thinking, I want this to go as well as possible. I want to be supported. And making those preparations through the lens of my end-of-life doula training, that we can prepare. And there's a lot of tools we can use, resources, education. And through those preparations, the rest of the journey can be better than it would have been.
Now, a lot of people might not even know what a doula is, let alone an end-of-life doula.
That's a good point. Yes. I can explain. So I forget sometimes. If people are familiar with a doula for birth, a birth doula, like a midwife, supports someone through the emotional, practical, logistical labor of bringing a human into the world. And just like there's a labor around coming into the world, there's a labor to leaving it. And so end-of-life doulas are often known for sitting bedside, is what we're envisioned as doing, that we would be there to support the person and their care network as they leave this world. And end-of-life doulas do far more than just sit bedside. And every doula that I know has a different specialty and focus. And for me, it happens to be the dementia journey. So it's the kind of core work of a doula is to be a companion, to be an advocate, to help people find resources and feel empowered as they leave the world.
Wonderful. Now, is there a certain time that somebody should call you in? You know, we know dementia is at this point it's a terminal disease. At what stage do people call you in? And are there different stages in which you can help?
Yeah, that's such an interesting question because it's changed recently or it's become more clear. And, you know, initially I and other people thought that I would be doing consultations with caregivers and people currently living with dementia. And I recently have launched an end-of-life planning tool that is actually for everybody everywhere. And so instead of having people wait until they're in crisis and hire me to consult with them, I want anyone anywhere to start with this tiny little tool. You know, it's not waiting till it kind of snowballs to a point of significant need. It's having this in your pocket already. That's a lot of my focus now is what can I give you to put in your pocket so that as you move forward, wherever you encounter dementia in your life, you'll feel more empowered and prepared for it. So the short answer is everybody everywhere can benefit from some of these tools.
Okay. And when you say have it in your pocket, is it something that can physically fit in your pocket and you carry around with you? Or is it just something, is that just a term that, you know, you're prepared?
It is both figurative and literal. One of the tools that I have, it doesn't technically fit in your pocket, but it is one page. And it is, I'm looking at mine right now on my wall. It is framed and Velcroed to my wall. And if something happened to me, if I had to go to the hospital, it could be pulled off my wall, taken with me to sit next to my bedside. And I've heard from nurses who say, this is the information I wish I knew about someone. It's the kind of music to put on, the channel that I might want to watch, the topics to mention. You know, something like if someone's from Wisconsin, even if they can't talk, saying, oh, I went to Wisconsin once and it was really lovely. And you can see more familiarity and comfort in their face. It's all these little kinds of things that get forgotten in the whole, you know, process of moving through hospital, skilled nursing, memory care. It puts that information right at the forefront, so it's easily used by anyone who comes into contact with them.
Okay. And those things are so important. I mean,
they're little things,
but boy, they make such a humongous difference in someone's life and comfort. And, you know, we've got to get past this feeling uncomfortable about talking about death and dying, because, I mean, there's no way out of it, guys. It's going to happen. So why not have as much control and comfort in your life while you're living, no matter, you know, what level that's at, and make it more comfortable for those caring for you, too. I think getting this information in their others' hands, it makes an incredible difference in terms of the comfort level of those that are caring for you. So it isn't just about the person you're caring for. Anyways, I don't think so. I think there's a huge, huge ripple effect in being able to talk about this stuff and know what they like or know what they want. I mean, even like, I remember when my dad was dying, people are like, well, you know, he doesn't want to be cremated. And I'm like, well, you know what? I've had the conversation, you know, with him and mom, you know, and there's so many things that we don't talk about. And it's really important to know, because otherwise you're beating yourself up. Or, you know, is it time to pull the plug? What was the person's wishes, you know, to alleviate that guilt? And all that second guessing that can go on can just be horrendous, you know, for those around that are caring. So in terms of tapping into, you know, your doula services, how does that work? Is there an application to fill out, or do they just say, hey, let's talk and meet?
So I actually am completely doing MOMO Math, which I forgot to mention stands for More Moments. And I have shifted back to that because this is information I wanted to have from every single resident memory care. And every older person I talk to is like, oh, yeah, I am scared. I'm scared that I'm getting it right now. I'm scared that I'm going to end up in a nursing home or the hospital tomorrow. And so I have assessed everything I can possibly do as a doula, and I've identified that this is where the power is. This is where, you know, I can support the most amount of people to live the most fully for the rest of their lives. So instead of having 10 clients over the next 2 years, I want hundreds of people to have a map. And like you said, it's something that isn't just for the person, it's for the relationships they have with people, that their caregivers have so many more ways to interact with them. And there are things not just like favorite music, but what songs did you sing along to in the car when you were a kid with your dad? Or what did your mom make for you on a sick day? And that kind of information gets lost. And so I know it sounds funny that I'm not using the full scope of my doula practice, but getting MOMO maps into people's hands, helping them make them and helping them incorporate into their lives, those are the steps I'm working on. Because once they have that, I think as a doula, getting that tool will allow the people in their lives to be a doula to them, that they'll be surrounded by more doulas because they'll have the tools to companion and support someone through that time of their life and to have those relationships and experiences together.
So this is something that they fill out themselves then, that is like a downloadable thing?
It is. So it's a digital product is what it's listed as on my website, that they'll be sent a PDF. But a lot of people find, much like, you know, you're talking about all the really intense end-of-life decisions, things like advanced directives, DNRs, those can be really heavy, and people find that any end-of-life document is hard to do. So I have, they can buy that and they can get it. They could have it 1 hour from now. They could fill it out. But a lot of people aren't that much of a go-getter and able to sit down and just do it. So I have map-making sessions is what I call them, where I will talk you through each of the questions. And within the end, by the end of the call, they would have that document and be able to give it to their loved ones. And then, like, I personally know whatever happens to me, I know that that's in my loved one's hands. And they know that those are things I want in my life. And I have them for my loved ones as well. And it brings a huge peace in the present. And then also I know that they're powerful in the future when they start being applied and used in their lives.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So then in these map-making sessions, are those individual or would you ever group people together to go through those? Or
they are group sessions, yeah.
Okay.
They are and that's something people could get to. I actually recommend if you identified, if you're like, I don't think I would immediately fill that out, getting the map making session at the same time so it's already on your calendar can mm-hmm. be really helpful. I know as a neurodivergent person who I find steps hard to do, if I mm-hmm. have it scheduled, then I'm more likely to do it. Because I love that a lot of people have gotten a MOMO map, but they have said, you know, it's hard to actually do it. So the map making is kind of where some of the magic happens. And it's really beautiful in those sessions. People will share at the end of it and they'll be like, oh, I didn't realize that I love this specific brand of soup from when I was a kid, or that this part of my daily life, this routine I do every single day, like for me feeding my hummingbirds, that's so important to me. And you'll see people's eyes light up. They're like, oh, I can visualize this in my future now. And that's the magic that I see with the maps.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, because you need some of that hardcore legal stuff in there if you're doing full planning and stuff. But then you have to get to the heart set pieces yeah. that are so important and so much of the time overlooked. You also, it looks like, have a 5-week course that's called the Treasure Hunt. You want to talk about that too?
Yeah, I am so excited about my treasure hunts. I found when I first started sharing maps, like I said, people wouldn't necessarily make one. And then if they did make one, they'd set it aside and be like, cool, I have that for the future. And what I want for myself and other people with disabilities and people without disabilities, and of course, people living with dementia, is that we're using them in our daily life. It's a tool that it's great if you get dementia. It's also great tomorrow when you have a bad day. And so the treasure hunts are something where, you know, lately I haven't been sleeping well, and I'm using things off of my MOMO map to support me to sleep better. And that's the kind of thing we bring into the treasure hunt is what's a challenge you're facing and where are you able to use, I call them micro delights is what is on the map. And they sound like small joys, but they're actually deeper than that because they're very practical. They're actually meeting these needs and helping accommodate us. And so a micro delight, like something I use, if it's hard to get up in the morning, I play one of my favorite songs and that helps me like jump out of bed. You know, it gets my brain to go, oh, okay, let's do this. So those little things we're finding throughout our days in our challenges, not just as, oh, that's a small joy and we enjoyed it, but that's a powerful tool we use to accommodate ourselves and have a better experience of our day.
Okay, wonderful. Well, that makes a ton of sense. And then you have, again, the power in the pocket section. It says here that's a free mini course that's available to groups like senior centers and community groups or aging councils. And, you know, I'm even thinking family councils, memory cafes. There's so many different groups that I think this would be really, really powerful for. How long are those little mini, is that little mini course that's free?
Yep, that's a free, just 1 hour session. And my dream is to go to as many senior centers as possible. And like you said, memory cafes, family groups, really anyone, and make those, there's a mini map that is this just three pieces of information. And even those three pieces of information have a ton of power. So you can start to see how those feel in your life. And then you can do the MOMO map if you want to do the bigger one. But the power in your pocket, it's the mini map and a couple other little tools that help people feel like, oh, I can envision this now. And I don't feel like it's just this dark pit of despair in my future, I can see myself dancing to a song in my wheelchair in a nursing home. And that can shift our whole being, as far as it really shifts from that cowering and that crisis to feeling preemptive comfort.
Mm-hmm. Oh, cool. Well, those seem like really neat tools and groups that kind of take the scary off a scary conversation, I guess, is really the only way to say it.
Yeah.
You know, there's so much taboo that we have been told on various things, and it just makes me sad that some of these really necessary, really important conversations, you know, have that taboo attached to them. And then, you know, when you're able to kind of lighten the conversation, everything changes. And people are like, why was I so afraid of this to begin with? You know, this is really important stuff. And then I would imagine you see a lot of people being advocates going, other people need to know about this now, and kind of helping spread the word. But, you know, it's getting all those little raving fans out there to kind of break through the barriers that have been built up for so many years. So kudos to you. Those are really, really neat things. Now, do you have other services that you want to talk about as well, or?
The Momo Maps are the one I really want people to know that they exist. Like I said, I wish my residents, my friends in memory care had that now. And so that's the big one. But it may be helpful for people to know I do offer something called From Panic to Power as well. And that's, like you're saying, shifting the scariness and the stigma to say, hey, there are people living with dementia, and they're really powerful advocates that we can learn so much from. And there's so much to learn about their experience, about the possibilities of living well, new ways of connecting with people that maybe aren't based on logic and verbal communication. And then we also, in that course, make some of these preparations. So that that course, From Panic to Power, can really shift us from panic to power and help us feel like we're more prepared for whatever may come.
Mm-hmm. And I love that term, panic to power. I think that's absolutely fantastic. You know, it's one of those things people just don't really think about what's holding them back. And because, again, we're all kind of in denial, you know, when we're falling into that rut of reality and getting to the other side. So kudos to you for helping people make that shift. One of the questions we had talked about, and I think we've already covered it, but I want to make sure, and that is, were there any other offerings in 2023 that you wanted to highlight?
Yeah, the Momo Map, the map making sessions, and the treasure hunt are the big things. And that's shifted a bit since we had first talked, you and I initially. Mm-hmm. It's funny, having a business, and you probably understand this, that a lot of times it's like a puzzle, and you think you're filling out one puzzle, and then all of a sudden, you know, things shift and everything falls into place. And I feel like the maps and the treasure hunts feel really aligned for me. It feels really powerful, and I'm excited to explore that with people. So 2023 feels really, it feels like a treasure for me to find the treasure hunt.
Yeah, well, and I think there's a lot of shifting going on this year. Just about everybody I talk to is saying that they're feeling this shift in terms of what they're going to deliver or how they're going to deliver it. Or even, you know, there's a lot of people, you know, changing jobs altogether and saying, this does not align with me anymore. And so I think it's great that you're in tune with that. One thing I did want to ask you about was with the Momo Maps. When I'm looking at your website, you know, it mentions the value is $35, but it says a self-selected pay. And then you've got $7, $14, $35, $49, and $70. Can you explain that to people in terms of what that means in terms of their choice, just to make sure that that's clear for them?
Yes, I appreciate you bringing attention to that. It is very important to me that whoever wants one can get one. And I didn't want, so I did some research and some talking with people and assessing the value, and 35 is more aligned with everything that went into it, and it's designed to have multiple copies given to many people, but I just wanted in people's hands. And so The $7 option, if everybody ever got it for $7, I'd be happy, because that helps me pay the administrative costs, and then it's in their hands. So for people who see that, if they want to, if they're able to pay the actual value of 35, some people really want to pay a higher amount to get it into more people's hands. But if people see the $7, that is a completely legitimate option, and I want people to feel completely free to choose any of those options.
Okay, sounds good. Are you a profit or a nonprofit company? Some people might be asking that as well.
I am a profit, but I like to think of myself as an anti-capitalist practice more than a business. Mm-hmm. So that's something you can see in my work, is that I don't do any ads or sponsorships. That may evolve eventually if it feels heart-centered, but as of right now, I am just operating to meet my basic needs. I'm intentionally not maximizing profit. But yes, I am a technically for-profit, not profit.
Well, and I think sometimes those titles just drive me crazy, because everyone assumes if you're a profit, you're making big money, and that's not always the case.
Yeah.
I'm a for-profit too, and I have a very big brand, but that does not mean that I have a very big income, you know.
And especially because you're doing such heart-centered work, that you're connecting so many people, like your profit in your reputation and how many people you're connecting, and it's massive in that regard. And that's what I want as well. I want that the impact more than the profit.
Yeah. And it is interesting though that there is a definite kind of line between even who can, you know, like apply for grants or even recognitions. You know, you can be government, you can be academic, you can be nonprofit, but a lot of times the for-profit are pushed out, and it's like there's a lot of good being done in the for-profit sector, just like there's some not so good things done in the other sectors. You know, no sector is perfect, and I think it's, you know, about working together and really being, you know, cause and purpose oriented, and not locked into the numbers so much in terms of, you know, that bottom line, which, you know, drives a lot of businesses these days. I don't care, you know, where they're at. And I think sometimes it can lose the creativity of what's needed to really meet society's needs by not being open. And a lot of times I think companies think they are, but I just like a lot of people think they're very open. And then when it's kind of pointed out, but no, you kind of snubbed that person, or you really didn't include them in. And they're not even really aware that that's happening, you know, so much of the time. And I think we all have to just get better at being more inclusive, looking bigger picture, and, you know, we'll just be a better world, you know, all the way around. One of the questions I wanted to ask you was, you know, who do you want to work with, and how can those people find you?
Yeah.
And that might be both partnerships in work, and then those that are, you know, your true clients as well. So feel free to answer either or both.
Yeah. You know, one of the ways, you know, as you know, with businesses, they talk about an ideal client, things like that, which has always been hard for me. But what makes it really easy is thinking about the first resident I ever worked with, or one of the first ones. And her name, which is not actually her name, but what, you know, the name that I use when I talk to people is Nancy. And Nancy was someone who was often overlooked by people, but she was lovely. And she was someone who she and I really connected, and we loved to just sit and listen to the birds or chat and walk or listen to music. And I want to find the Nancys, the people who may be overlooked, you know, especially women who are maybe still healthy and independent, but they'll be a Nancy in a memory care community in 15 to 20 years. And building those relationships now, getting to know people who are looking ahead at their future and want to continue being the wonderful, vibrant people they are right now and living the wonderful lives they're living. So I really want to find those Nancys, or Bobs, because I've known a lot of Bobs who are fantastic too. And one of the ways I do want to find them, you mentioned people I could partner with, and I really think a lot about senior centers, because senior centers are so full of vibrant, often still fairly independent and healthy elders who are looking ahead of the future. And I've worked in senior centers before where you have someone who's there and then they go to the hospital and then they're in assisted living and you never see them again. And I want to be building relationships there where people are prepared, whatever may happen tomorrow or 5 years or 10 years down the line.
Wonderful. And it is funny when you said it's hard to define, but then when you think of a person, it becomes much easier to be able to, to put that into a solid statement, because it is. I struggle with that all the time, but I can come up with people or situations that it's like, that's what I want to do. That's who I want to know.
I run into them all the time too. I'll just be out and about somewhere and I'll turn to my spouse and I'll say, that's a Nancy. And not in the regard of like, I want to have them in my business, but just like, that's someone who I would love to spend time with. Like, they're just wonderful. And I can see what a strong, vibrant person they are. And it is, you're right. Like, it's a very distinctive feeling of like, oh yeah, those are the people I want to work with.
Yep. Yeah, I remember having, when I was working with the developmentally disabled, and there were so many people that were so afraid of many of the clients. And one of them, you know, she had lost all her teeth, you know, her hair was kind of wild. She had the most beautiful blue eyes and the biggest, most precious smile, though. Just absolutely, I just adored it. And she would come up and she would hug people and she would, what would she say? Something like, you have snake's breath or something, but she had this big smile on and people were kind of scared. And I remember my stepson going, I can't be around her. She just scares me. Mm. And I said, come on, we're going to go back over there and you're going to meet Adeline. And I'm going to tell you, she's one of my favorites and why. And by the end of our discussion, you know, Adeline was sitting on his lap, giving him a hug. And he was like, I get why you love Adeline. No, because she was just so full of love and joy. I mean, that's really all that was in her. You never really saw her snap or get angry or anything. She was just pure joy. But because she looked different, she talked different, people pushed that away. And, you know, they didn't look deep enough to see her soul. And gosh, I still to this day, and I mean, this was over 40 years ago, I still have pictures of her that I can pull out that just melt my heart, you know, when I think about her and so many of the others. And, you know, I just think of how many people are we missing out in our lives because we're afraid because they're different. And then they can turn out to be, you know, a best friend or a dear colleague, you know, or a wonderful client or a neighbor, you know, or just somebody, you know, at the coffee shop. Doesn't really make any difference, you know, who it is or what level they are in your life. But I think so often we build those fences and those barriers instead of breaking them down and reaching across the aisle and getting to know somebody. And I just think that is a sad state that our world is in right now. So it's lovely to talk with people like you that are being more expansive and open and inclusive and realizing, none of us is perfect. We didn't come here perfect. We're not going to go out of here perfect. That's just the way it is. You know, this is a level to learn on, and some people just don't want to take that on at all, which is to me sad. But that just makes more work for the rest of us to do, and makes us more passionate in terms of what we're doing and how we can do it. What is a way that our audience can help you in your business, Emerson?
Yeah, the thing I've said multiple times, the thing that I really want is people just to know about the Momo Map. And so even, maybe you don't get one, but just telling people, being like, there's this tool and maybe it could help us in our futures. And so sharing that's the thing. There's so many hard end of life documents, but this one is fun. It's almost like a personality quiz, and it can help us today. And so that's the thing that I really like. My heart has been sitting with the Momo Map for years now. It's been wanting them out in the world, and that would be the biggest gift, is just for people to know that they exist and share them with other people. And those are, they are available now at makinghappymemories.com. So, telling people to go there, checking it out yourself. And then, like we talked about, if there's groups who want to share them, they can reach out to me. I can share them in that setting too, in the Power in Your Pocket. It is something that I just really want to, share everywhere. I want to go hand them out on the street to everybody.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you do speaking at conferences and things?
I haven't done conferences yet, but I have done some speaking engagements, and I do enjoy those. So yes, that's kind of on my professional bucket list, is to go to a conference. It just hasn't happened yet with COVID.
Okay. Yeah. And a lot of them have cut back, and some of them have gone, on the wayside to internet, which some people like, some people don't like, all of that. But I think you would be just a wonderful speaker. You're very comfortable in terms of what you're talking about. You're extremely knowledgeable. And like you said, you're heart-centered in terms of what your goal is. And to me, that makes for a real engaging speaker. So if you're listening out there, maybe this is something too that, and I don't want to force your hand in this, but, maybe the mobile map is something that companies would like to use and do a licensure with for their families as people enter their communities, to help the whole family out, as well as the staff. And again, I don't know if that's something you'd consider or not, and I don't want to put you on the spot with it.
I think there could be great value there. I can talk about that for a little bit. That is something that's actually on my radar. The Momo Maps are being launched right now, on smaller scale, but it's even on my website at the very bottom. I want to do group rates. I want to get them to as many places as possible. I can kind of envision some of the steps. And one of the things is that I would want it to be an ongoing partnership, that it's being continually implemented, and we're checking in together on that. And so if anybody wants to partner with me in that, if you want to be one of the first communities that I do that with, it is something that I envision doing. I will say I worked in memory care during a COVID outbreak. That was very traumatizing to me. So I am very trepidatious around the big companies, but there are some wonderful smaller communities that I can definitely see this going into. And then if it, gets bigger and gets into the bigger ones, that's great too. But right now, yes, I'm open to partnering with smaller communities.
Oh, cool. Well, that sounds wonderful. And I think it's really important. I think COVID has brought about more partnerships because dollars are tighter, staff is tighter. I mean, everything. We just have to tighten up and we have to work better together. And so instead of recreating something that you see is good, work with whoever developed that and have a broader, footprint. That's my belief anyways. But well, this has just been a wonderful conversation. Is there anything that we haven't covered that you would like to cover?
I'm trying to think, and I feel like you asked such thoughtful questions and sometimes ask questions I didn't even realize were good to answer. And it's just been wonderful to have that conversation with you and talk about so many important things. So I really appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate your time today. Again, people can reach you by going to your website, makinghappymemories.com. They can also email you there at EmersonLee@makinghappymemories.com. You're also on Instagram as Let's Make Moments and on Facebook as Happy Memories Elder Support. And then are you comfortable giving out a phone number? Some people are, some people aren't. So I always like to ask that before I state that.
Yes. I have a work number set up specifically for that so people can call and text me anytime. So it's 360-972-6076. And I appreciate that you brought that up because for some people, we know they're not going to go on a website or on a social media platform. And if they want to call and talk to me or however, whatever works for them, I want to reach them in that platform, meet them wherever they're at.
Well, that's nice. I don't give out my phone number, not because I don't want to, but I just get so many spam and crap calls that I just don't give it out. And so I will once I connect with people online. So I should just let people know that's kind of how I work. I'm not trying to be a snub because I love talking
on
the phone.
Well, it's how the world is these days. You know, it's all shifting. So, you know, I always think people might want to use the phone and then everybody has figured out Zoom and is more tech savvy than I am. So I think that's just how they are now.
Yeah, Zoom is nice and easy, and it's wonderful when it works, but every now and then they do upgrades. I was on it the other day, and it seemed like every meeting one person had multiple people, kind of a strip over their head with multiple people flying in. They were all within our group, but they were all black and white. But I'm like, gosh, if anyone, you know, has epilepsy, this is not good. You know, we need to turn this video off because it was just so hectic. And stuff, but that too will, I'm sure, work the bugs out of that and stuff. So, and social media and technology is forever changing, you know, so it's one of those things we have to get used to. And people are, like you said, very specific on how they like to communicate. I know my daughter's in her mid-30s, and I mean, gosh, you know, rarely does she answer the phone or listen to her messages. You know, it's text me, you know, and stuff, and same with emails and things. So everyone's a little bit different. And again, another reason we have to be more inclusive and open-minded. And our way isn't always the only way or the right way. There's much to learn from many people. So again, Emerson, thank you so much for your time today and the work that you're doing to make the world a better place. I really do appreciate it. And I'm sure our audience does too. Again, for our audience, please like, click, and share, you know, and check out the Momo map and see what you think. It looks really interesting. And again, if you're looking for an end-of-life doula, you know, Emerson offers a lot of really cool practical things that'll make not only the person's life with dementia better, but yours for those who are caring for them and love them as well. So until next time. We will talk soon, everybody. Bye-bye.
Hi, this is Suzanne Newman, host of the Answers for Elders podcast and radio show. We are the North Star that guides you through the complicated journey of senior care with trusted experts in money, law, living solutions, and more. So join us on this station, your favorite podcast channel, or just go to answersforelders.com. Meet the way showers who will help your journey go a lot easier.